Hi, everybody. Welcome to the FinOps Nexus podcast. I'm your host, John Meyer, and joining me today is the one and only Frank from Strategic Blue and the FinOps Guys podcast. Frank, thanks so much for joining me.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Frank, it's about time we get on a podcast together. We've been trying to do this for a while, I have to tell you.
Oh, yes. Yes, but last time was for a good reason. We couldn't make it because of tacos.
That's right. And finally, I said, Frank, let's do it. Schedule now. And Frank's like, okay, next Wednesday. I'm like, all right, we're in. What are we talking about? And then speaking of that, our topic today is why is cloud pricing upside down? And Frank, you noted that in other industries, the on-demand price is the one that you use only as a last option. But in cloud, it's the first option. What's that all about?
So that was coming from an interview we did with the CEO of Strategic Blue. He's a commodities trader. So it's coming from the banking perspective. And he was talking about that, just to be confusing, in normal industry, in other industries, the price that you get immediately, the one that we call on demand, is named spot, the spot price. So let's ignore that bit. But overall, it says in anything, you always want to pay the cheaper price. You don't start with, hey, I always want to pay my electricity at the top price because I need it now. You know you're going to consume a certain amount. So you start by saying, hey, this I'm going to consume for that amount of time. This I'm going to consume. You start with almost the commitments. You start everything as, what would be my price at 3 years? Everything at 3 year. And then you say, okay, but that stuff cannot be at 3 year. Can it be at 1 year? And then only at the end you get to that, oh, I'm really desperate. I need that power now. Would you go to the spot price? Well, if you look at the three biggest cloud vendors are doing is they start with the spot price and then they tell you that you could, for certain services only, go to a cheaper price by committing. And on a side note, which is quite interesting, is I was looking at Alibaba some time ago, quite a while ago, and the first thing was, commit with me for 1 year. Then you would move to others. They were the only one that was completely reversed, but I think it was mostly because, yeah, they wanted the cash now.
Why is the on-demand the first one? Or you're calling it spot, but it's the on-demand. Why is the on-demand the first option for all three of the hyperscalers?
Well, I think the way you can see is the version I have, which is a nice romantic version, is they make 20 years investment like data centers. They make they buy servers, which is a 5, now I think 6 years for AWS investment. And so they are taking lots of risk and they don't know if they have the capacity, especially at the beginning. They did not know if they would have the clientele, the people effectively consuming that stuff. So what you see is that they took the other way around is, I, as the cloud vendor, I'm taking all the risk. So I'm going to give you, it's going to cost a lot. And so what I call it internally was say it's a risk premium. What you are paying on demand is a risk premium. And then the more you can reduce that risk and take it on you, the more the discount you'll get. So if you start saying, hey, I'm going to tell you, Mr., let's say AWS, I want to use this instance in this region for the next year, you're going to get a better discount that I'm going to use this instance overall in the world. So the more precise you get, the more risk you are taking as a user, the more discount they can give you. And so you reduce that risk premium, and that goes to the extreme of spot, which is you as the user all of a sudden take most of the risk because they can turn it off at any point. They can just get it back at any point, which is the opposite of on-demand. And that's where you get the biggest discount, but the more risk.
Frank, why do you think it is that consumers, those who are on the other end going to utilize these cloud resources, aren't choosing the cheaper instances, the long-term, the commitments, the 1, the 3 year, or even the spot for it, and just default to on-demand? Because there are so many options that you can say, you know what, there's this instance type for 1 or 3 year, I'm going to take it and go with it. But most users are just selecting the default of on-demand.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. And I think that comes from the fact that you have that that cloud came from shadow IT. The reality is that's why they accept credit card to start with. It was the engineer that all of a sudden had that power, were able to buy the instances they needed. And it was all about that flexibility. It was about trying things. And it just continued. There is lots of marketing you can see from the cloud vendors, which is good stuff, but about how flexible the cloud is. And so if you use the cloud correctly, you would only use the spiky thing. You would turn off everything when you don't use it. Never happens. but overall, it's the idea with that. I'm losing track of my idea there. But the main thing is effectively that it started from shadow IT. And so it's not following the standard process of procurement. Procurement will start looking at that. What is my discount? What is the most discounted price? And then when do I need least discounted price? Here we're talking about engineers who wants to have availability and scalability, infinite scalability. So that's where it comes from. Plus, cloud vendors are using the marketing to effectively infuse that day. We are here to innovate. We need that flexibility. We need the growth. And it goes to extreme, I can tell you. It was ages ago, someone was asking me, say, what is the word you dislike the most in cloud? Which is a really good question. And I said, it's reserved instance. It's neither reserved nor an instance. It's a forward contract. And still, we're transforming something which is financial into something that is, at least in words, technical, because the audience is technical. Still today, and that's where I think we start seeing differences. AWS comes from startup and this side, enterprises. My guess is they're negotiating way harder in the right order of commitment.
Well, reserve instances are that billing construct. Basically, it's a line item minus something. You actually don't say this instance I'm keeping. It just says, just going to pay cheaper for the instance that I'm already using. Frank, you mentioned procurement is going to go look and see what is the most cost-efficient instance type or, you know, efficiency for it, that they can reserve certain things for their engineering. The problem that I see from an engineering perspective is that it slows things down, and engineers hate being slowed down. If I have an idea, I want to go to the cloud. I want to go build it right away, and I don't want to go through a whole 6 months process. Procurement's going to go, okay, yeah, we can get this. Yeah, we get this. 3 weeks later, and the engineer who is off on something else and working on something really cool is like, yeah, well, whatever. I don't need that now. Now find this one. And they can't, you know, it's speed, all about the innovation factor.
You're absolutely correct. But that's where engineers shine is in the dev environment. In dev, in my opinion, you should be authorized to do whatever you want, to create. You don't commit in the dev environment. You probably won't spot. At the same time, the dev environment, after working hour, you should turn off at least a big chunk of it, except the testing that never stops, or compiling. But you should turn it off. When you go to pre-prod, for example, you might have a different, or when you go to prod, you would have to have made some certain architectural decisions. And I think the difference, and first time I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking out loud here, but is that it's the architectural decision that we'll see. The developers, you try things, you do it, you see where your code runs best, and then you come out and I say, I need C6 instances, I need C instances. Now, go for it. As soon as you have that information and you know your production is going to run for hopefully quite a lot, because otherwise you're in deep trouble, you can start committing. And that's, I think it's more, is that that thing, you're correct. But development or engineers work in they should be authorized to change things so they can find the right one. But then when you find the right one, I would recommend committed.
Frank, when you talked about the development environment that should be shut down after hours, and I was an admin for years, and one of the biggest things was, you know, I want to work after hours. I want to work when I'm home. Like engineer, he worked the traditional, you know, 9 to 5, whatever it is. But then later he's like, you know what? I want to play with this one and go home. So if you have some automation in place to shut down things, he's like, no, disable it. And then he goes home and he may or may not work on it. Now it's running for another 48 hours before he touches it. There needs to be some processes in place and rules and guidelines that you need to follow and that automatically get shut down no matter what. And it seems to be more of a human thing of shutting down dev to, you know, your test environment when you're not using it. And most people consider dev almost near production value in some cases.
Absolutely, yes. Well, that's quite often where the cost can be higher than prod and even from people. The thing I would say, so for lots of software, that's why we use containers, because that was the initial thing of containers, is where you could run the same container on your computer or on your local server on a subset of servers, and then transport that same container, boom, elsewhere on your prod or pre-prod environment or, well, stage. The other thing, you're absolutely correct. Also, you might want to work outside of hours. You can still keep some stuff running. Oh, this is where the scalability of the cloud comes in. Someone is joining. Yes, you turn on that instance, you create it. The point is that quite often things are just left running. So building that scalability is not a developer thing normally, because that's in the past, it was the kind of people like me, sysadmin, managing the load balancers and saying, oh, we're gonna, or creating script to turn things on and off. I think that's where maybe the DevOps, the poor guys, now they need to do DevSec, Fin, GreenOps team now needs to do absolutely everything, poor people. And so you end up like, sometimes you're more dev and sometimes you're more ops. And I think the problem we're discussing is more ops. And so if we talk about engineers as devs, yeah, it might be ignored or not, yeah, focused.
Frank, from a FinOps perspective, how do you go about approaching or solving this problem? You talked about it a little bit, but as a FinOps practitioner or a FinOps team that's in a company, cloud pricing is on demand, it's upside down. How do I approach this to educate my team and to resolve or at least tackle some of this problem?
So the first thing, which was quite interesting. So as a job, I do rate optimization. Okay, that's why we focus on that. We as a company, we come from banking, so we really see it from a market perspective, which is why this initial thing of the price being upside down came from. But you tackle it. For example, the rate optimization is the only thing from the FinOps framework that you can outsource completely. You can just pass it to someone else and have zero consequences. It's their problem. It's my problem usually. That's what you can do. The other thing, what almost no one does, and because it's very hard to do with native tooling, is to show the developers, in particular, on-demand equivalent pricing, the usage. Because what you want, but because that's what they can influence. A developer cannot influence how RIs or savings plans are being bought, or the effect of these ones. As we say, they are financial construct, ignore that, but they can change how efficient is the software, and cost should be a performance metric, by the way, of software. But then, so you need to show them only on demand equivalent. So for me, as a FinOps practitioner, there is always that language things. I need to talk with procurement and finance about procurement and finance. I need to talk to them about how we're going to get discounts in a certain way. On the other side, I need to say to the developers, I need to show them what they can influence and making sure that they have that almost immediate feedback, which is usual is you do we've done a change, you can see the result, and that's on-demand equivalent. And so you need to show different things. You need to, as a FinOps practitioner, you need to be that bridge between all those different people. And one thing which I continue to hammer on is to say that as a FinOps practitioner, you need to learn the language of each one of them. You don't need to select the one that you come from and decide that everyone else needs to learn it. You need to learn how finance work. They've been doing and managing money for the last 2,000 years. They have a clue. They've probably seen most of the use cases. You're not going to bring them anything new. The technical people, they are working with very complicated, very advanced things. You need to learn a little of that. And if you come from finance, you need to learn a little of that if you want to be a good FinOps practitioner. So being that bridge with procurement is the same, with executive is the same. You need to learn the language of all of your stakeholders. And in FinOps, there are many.
You mentioned actually talking about and learning the languages between all of them. And obviously, you are the center, the focal point, right, for team and
Yes.
collaboration, which is part of the framework. The other part is a third party to manage your reserve instances. If you're not in the business to manage them, outsource it. Because I'll tell you what, they have more skills, 10 times more efficiency, and you have other things to worry about. If your business is to do X and not worry about reserve instances, outsource it. And I like how you said it's their problem, not yours, because ultimately they want to get you savings because that's how they get paid.
Yep. So send it to me.
I love that plug-in, Frank. Well, Frank, I got to wrap things up a little bit, and I really appreciate you sharing your insights on the on-demand and why cloud is so upside down. We got plenty of more of these podcasts coming and a lot more information and a virtual event coming up that Frank is going to join us at. We're not going to spoil that now, but Frank, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, and absolutely amazing how you come up with questions. I am so impressed by your competence. Well done.
What Frank is saying is we only had a topic and I kicked it off, and wherever it went, that's how it went. It's unscripted, and I'm always inquisitive on how he's thinking about this in the process, and coming from a technical background, I want to dive into more from the audience. So Frank, thank you so much for the compliment.
Have a fantastic day, everyone. Thank you again.
All right, everybody. This has been the FinOps Nexus podcast. As always, hit that like, subscribe, and notify, because we're out of here.
Bye-bye.